Kildare Today with Clem, Owen and Kira.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, as I said, coming up this hour, we're going to be talking about that documentary you saw on telly on Monday night about the Sallins train robbery and more allegations of what's called brutal Garda heavy gang tactics. We saw the Una Linsky case the previous Monday, and the Kerry Babies case is the next one. It's riveting stuff, I have to say. If you haven't seen it, check it out on the RTE player. And going back to Shannon's message about the killing of Aisling Murphy, by the way, in describing it as a freak event, certainly very unusual in the manner it was done. But I think the one valuable point Shannon makes is that it's still a rarity that these things happen. It's not happening every day of the week. And he makes the point that, you know, there's a certain amount of hysteria out there at the moment with people being afraid to go out and maybe watching and checking and whatever else. He makes the point that Ireland is generally a safe place and that people need to keep in mind, go about their daily business, and whether it be, you know, in town or whatever else, but of course always exercise due diligence in terms of where you're going and times you're going. We just have to do that. That's the reality of it. Anyway, another message says, Clem, that mystery sound of yours, I think, is the sound of you counting 50 euro notes. Oh, boy. Yes, indeed. I wish I was. Oh, jeez, lads, the back. You know, it's killing me. Last night, I'm very tired today. Really tired. Wrecked sleep last night. Every time I tried to turn into bed, the back went for a walk. Oh, the pain of it. And then trying to settle down again and to put it back in. I think I need to go to Danny Neal down there in Carlow, the bone setter, famous owner of Denoli. Remember the people's champion, as the horse was called. Danny's a great man. I've gone to him in the past for a bit of bone setting and he's been very, very good. Other than that, I need to get a chiropractor or a physiotherapist. Any of those, I'm sure, can do the job as well. Good one, isn't it? One more listen and Shinna will. Think about that sound and you can enter on 0833 97 97 97 and that's text or WhatsApp. Okay, let's proceed. I've mentioned a couple of times the trio of documentaries that RT Television is showing on, is it Monday night? And I watched the Sallins train robbery with the same sense of shock, I have to say, and horror. I remember I lived through these times of the Sallins train robbery, previously the Una Linsky murder, and also the appalling Kerry Babies Tribunal. And indeed, many people who mightn't have been familiar with it before will be shocked at the allegations of what's called the brutal Garda heavy gang tactics. Let's hear more from Sinn Féin TD, who's the party spokesperson on justice and equality, Martin Kenny. Good morning again, Martin.
Good morning, how are you?
Thank you for joining us on the programme. Now, as I said, that's an overview of what we're watching in the documentaries. But I suppose to explain to people who haven't watched them or indeed didn't live through the time, what are we talking about when we talk about the Garda heavy gang?
Well, really what we're talking about here is, and most people would link it to what was known at the time as the Murder Squad, which was a small group of Gardaí detectives based in Dublin who, when serious crime happened around the country where somebody went missing or there was a murder or a body discovered, and obviously there was a serious investigation to be carried out, that they would come in and would carry out that investigation. They would also have been involved, maybe, rather than the whole squad coming in other situations where there would have been serious crime as well. Maybe a number of them would go to assist Gardaí in local areas where they would have investigations to carry out. And one of the issues that I suppose has clearly been in the public mind and has been known about for probably since the time it was going on, because there was a lot of, as it detailed in the documentary, the Amnesty International, and there was a whole lot of organisations expressing concerns about the tactics being used by this group of Gardaí, who were very brutal, very aggressive in their techniques when it came to you know, interrogating people, and the way they behaved was absolutely outrageous. They dismissed anybody's human rights in regard to this, and very often, and in my job, I've come across numerous people who would have had either themselves or relatives who would have been vulnerable people at the time, who would have been arrested and very, very badly treated, and it would have destroyed their lives and made them nervous wrecks for the rest of their lives, even if there was no further charges or anything happened. So, you know, it was a very dangerous and wrong thing that was occurring. And I think the issue that this documentary is really exposing is that it was actually not just that a small number of Gardaí were doing this as rogues, if you like, that it was sanctioned by the state, that the state was allowing this to go on, that it was actually a policy at the time of the government.
Now, in regards to that point, Martin, just to hold you on that point about it being a policy of the state, I lived through the Una Linsky case and also the Salins and the other ones, so I'm very familiar with what went on at the time. Now, let's deal with it first at the more micro level of within An Garda Síochána. The name of Chief Superintendent John Courtney, late John Courtney, comes up across these cases as being initially a detective in one of the cases and then promoted through the ranks. So there's an allegation that not alone was this approved, but in fact it was being approved in a sense of a career progress.
Yeah.
How clear are we? Because I certainly heard it in media reports across those decades, in every one of those cases, allegations of a murder squad, a murder squad, a murder squad. What about then at the highest levels of An Garda Síochána?
Well, that's the issue, and I think not just in the highest levels of An Garda Síochána, but in the highest levels of the state, of the Ministers for Justice that were in charge of the different times throughout all of that, and the Department of Justice itself. You know, what was the situation? Was this being given the green light to go ahead? And it certainly appears to be the case. I mean, we had Conor Cruise O'Brien was an interview with him where he acknowledged that he knew that the Gardaí at times used to beat and abuse people, and that was, you know, appropriate because of the situation the state was in. As we know, there was a conflict in the north, and there was a lot of people been killed, and the country was in turmoil, and all of those things were happening. But that still does not excuse, you know, the state behaving outside of the law, and that is the issue that all of this comes to. And I think it's important to say as well, and all of us need to say it, that the vast majority of Gardaí, you know, acted properly with integrity, and most people out there, when they had a problem or they had an issue, even throughout those times, the ordinary guard on the street, you know, were competent and capable and looked after people, and they had, and people trusted the guards. And that's one of the big issues here, is that I've come across people who were very trusting of the guards, are very supportive of the guards, and yet when they found themselves on the wrong side of the law for some reason, or even being suspicious in regard to some of this that happened, they found that, you know, the law just turned on them and was vicious.
And many of the same names, the same Gardaí, as you say, right. In particular in regards to this murder squad, which became known as the Garda Heavy Gang. And yes, it was absolutely current commentary that this was going on. And we saw the traumatised victims of some of that treatment, whether it been the Una Linsky case, and their lives had been destroyed. Yep. Still 40, 50 years on, looking for justice there. We saw Oscar Brannock, Brian McNally, being eventually released after years in prison. We saw Nicky Kelly, the bizarre situation where Nicky Kelly, who skipped during the trial because he maintained he was innocent, went off to the United States, and when Oscar Brannock and Brian McNally were eventually cleared by the Criminal Court of Appeal, Nicky Kelly returned to Ireland against the advice of his solicitor, who became a judge later on, Pat McCartan, who's retired now and says on one of the programmes there wasn't a scintilla of evidence that could have convicted these men. When Nicky Kelly came back after he was put in jail again.
Yeah, and put in jail for a number of years, and had to go on hunger strike for to try and highlight his case. And international pressure on the government at the time meant that they released him under humanitarian grounds. And then years later, he got a presidential pardon, which in effect, you know, expunged his conviction. But the issue here, and the issue that is at the core of all of this, is that if the state is going to learn from the mistakes, or I would say from the wrongdoings of the past, because I don't think a lot of this was mistaken, it was actually intentional, we have to examine it, we have to learn from it, we have to open it up, we have to be transparent, and we have to have a full public inquiry into these issues about these three cases that have been highlighted here. But there are a whole lot of other cases, more minor cases, some of them who didn't get to court, but where people were abused and beaten and had their lives destroyed as well. And all of the issues around how the heavy gang operated and how the judicial system worked hand in glove with them for to make it happen, for to allow innocent people often for to go to jail for long periods of time, that needs to be exposed, and we need to have a proper inquiry into it and a full apology to the people whose lives were destroyed as a consequence of all of this.
And notwithstanding that particular demand, even though You would acknowledge now as a public representative that the way the Garda Síochána functions nowadays is, you know, a million miles away from the way it functioned then. You would still see the necessity that even though there are reassurances that this could not happen again, you still see the necessity to have a public inquiry to exonerate those people in the past, and indeed maybe to bring to justice in some shape, form or other, even retrospectively, because no Gardaí were ever charged about this.
Absolutely, no. I mean, they destroyed, they in fact broke the law themselves, but none of them ever went to jail or ever had had even their pension sanctioned for it. All of them were in fact promoted, were looked after by the state in every way, and the only people that cost anything was the state. The taxpayer had to pay compensation on numerous and numerous occasions. I had a case beside me in Leitrim where there was a man who was accused of, his wife went missing and was taken in and was badly beaten, and his children taken out of school and interviewed, and the state had to pay compensation to that man when he took them to court afterwards. But the Gardaí had done it, there was no sanction for them. In fact, they were promoted. And there's numerous other cases around the country where we have similar situations. And at the very end of the day, you know, and I take your point that, you know, how the Gardaí operate today, and there is much greater oversight and we have improved a great deal. But it's not that very long ago. Not that very long ago at all. We don't have to go back to the 70s to find issues which are very, very serious. You know, Maurice McKay brought a whole lot of things to the fore, and many others. And indeed, there were cases quite recently, I think it was 2016, there was a case in the north, in Belfast Court, where a judge drew out a case because of when he looked at the way that statements was attained by the Gardaí from a suspect in the south. And he said, look, this is wrong. This person's right to silence was not adhered to, nor indeed the aggressive way in which he was interviewed was totally wrong, and he threw out the case because of that. And that's not going back to the 70s. That's going back to 5 or 6 years ago. So, you know, there are still issues there. Nothing as extreme or of great cause of concern as there was in those times, but there certainly are issues there that need to be dealt with, and there needs to be a full reflection on how we administer our criminal justice system and how the Gardaí act and act appropriately. And as I said, it is a tiny minority of Gardaí that acted this way in the past, but it created a culture. It created a culture of that it was okay, and we drew a blind eye to it, and that we let it go on. And we need to examine that and ensure that that culture and that attitude is made something that is completely in the past, and that we move forward with openness and transparency of the police system and a police service that works for everybody and that is part of our community.
All right, indeed. If you haven't seen these particular programmes, I think it's incumbent upon everybody to have a look at them to know what happened, because certainly there are a lot of questions to be answered. Marion says her father was in school with Nicky Kelly. Nicky Kelly later became a counsellor in Wicklow, if I recall correctly. Then another listener says the heavy gang was active in lots of counties. Kildare was no different. Men in Kildare, as a result of a murder investigation, got severe hidings. When years later, the culprit was found with DNA, says a listener. And another listener says, I have a story to tell about the guards who took my son in 33 years ago and he was beaten badly. So, you see, the stories are emerging. People, as such, are not making up this in regards to that. But meanwhile, a party spokesperson on this whole area on justice and equality, and indeed TD for Sligo Leitrim, Sinn Féin TD, Martin Kenny. Thanks, Martin, for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much, Liam. God bless.
Good morning to you. Lots of concerns out there. Now, one last chance, folks, to hear the mystery sound. And then between now and 11, we'll be picking out one listener to give them a go. I don't need to see your guest, but there are some guesses coming in, and I can tell you already that it's not a straw baler that Peg Regan sent in. It's not a washing machine that someone else sent in. What is this?
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, some of you still sending the answers, even though I said don't bother. I'll have to consult the man who's responsible for all of this mayhem, Paul Power, Programme Director, in regards. But here's a couple anyway. Josie O'Keefe says, Josie had guessed, is it a washing machine? No. And she guessed, is it a kettle boiling? No, it's not. Another listener says, is the mystery sound a cement mixer? No. When I was growing up in Dublin 12, Crumlin Garda Station had a terrible reputation, says Joy. If you were brought in there, you were going to get a hiding, she alleges. Is the sound the lotto balls, says Francis Dunn in Rathvilly? No, it's not. Good morning, Clem. That's the sound that Ciara Owen Dara trying to jackhammer your wallet open. says Mark in Nace. Okay, and then the last week I felt like the rest of the country. Mad, sad, devastated. Frustration on the senseless death of Aisling Murphy. It has to stop now. We can't let her death be in vain. She was a rosebud never to bloom. It's now time for Aisling Law. Zero tolerance to violence. Thank you, Trish Proctor, in Castledermot, for those thoughts. All right, let's go to Ciara.
Yeah, we're heading down south of the county now. Joining me is the Labour councillor for Athy MD, Mark Lee. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Ciara.
You asked the council, Mark, to confirm how many bins have been upgraded and replaced since the report on bins was completed in 2021.
Yep, a favourable response to that one, Ciara. There's 12 new bins going to be upgraded in the near future in Athy. Before I actually put in the question to the council, I hadn't realised that the Environmental Special Policy Committee in Kildare County Council had put through a policy brief on replacing all the broken bins in the county, and knowing the councillors involved in that, including our own colleague in Athy, Councillor Brian Dooley and Suzanne Doyle and Ida Cusson, I'm sure that will be brought through no problem at their next meeting in March. But for now, we have a promise of 12 new bins in Athy.
Okay, can you just highlight the specific areas the bins will be going in?
Well, there is a number of broken bins. There's a number of broken bins in what we would call Shaw's Car Park or Ignatius Rice Square. They will be replaced. There's a couple up around Towns Park along the riverbank. They'll all be replaced. They're in bad need of replacement, and they'll be replaced in the next few months, Ciara.
Okay. I was speaking with Councillor Brian Dooley yesterday in regards to St Michael's Cemetery, and you also put a question forward to the council about the cemetery in Athy.
I did. I asked about the when the new columbariums are coming in. Now, a columbarium, for listeners that mightn't be aware, are a place where you can place the ashes of a loved one, and you have somewhere to visit the ashes. And I know it's a sentiment that people like to visit where their loved ones are rested, and a columbarium gives an opportunity to put the ashes of a loved one into a kind of a wall behind a lock slot, and they're a lovely thing. I've seen them in Switzerland and places like that, and it's just lovely to go and be able to visit and say your piece in somewhere nice and peaceful, you know.
And what was the response to that, Mark?
There is money put aside for columbariums, and we are going to have them start amongst not only St Michael's Cemetery but other cemeteries around South Kildare in the third quarter of this year.
Okay, you also asked the council to reinstate the power source. That's in the centre of Emily Square to facilitate upcoming projects.
Yeah, well, the upcoming projects I have in mind is I've been working with the Irish Makers Market. As you probably know, Ciara, they have a very successful market in Newbridge and Kildare Town. I think it's a Thursday and a Saturday, maybe. And I have invited them to come to Athy on a Sunday and run their market. Fortunately, they need a power source, and we have a case in the Emily Square in Athy where you can. But it just has been disconnected over the years for whatever reason, I'm not sure, and I've asked the council to reconnect it. The officials at the meeting did say that they were doing up Emily Square in September. They're starting Emily Square in September in conjunction with the Shackleton Museum in Athy, and that they would put in a power source then, but unfortunately the Irish Makers Market are starting in February and we need to get it up and running now. But I have been in talks with a local electrician, and through the Thai promoters, we're looking at getting it done ASAP.
Okay. And just briefly, Mark, your final motion was in regards to drainage and reinstatement of the road surface in Kildangan on Killeen Lane.
Yeah, not to be confused with Killeen Lane. I had a motion down last month, Ciara, speaking to you on that one as well. It's a different Killeen Lane as well. Often the case in Ireland, you don't have two similar place names or
yeah, this one's in Kildangan, yes.
Yeah, no, it's the same. Yes, the other one was in Kildangan.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, but not to be sensationalising things, this is probably the worst surface we have in the county at the moment, maybe definitely in Athy MD. The council have issued a response that it could be going under the community involvement scheme, but I am a fan of the community involvement scheme, Ciara, but unfortunately would say 8 of the 9 houses on this lane are elderly, and to come up with 15,000 between them at this stage of their life, you know, to pay enough taxes and stuff, I think we should be looking at a solution to try and an alternative solution to the community involvement scheme.
Okay, so the council has no plans then?
Oh, we have plans to do it, but they have told us that they will try to work within the flexibilities of the community involvement
Okay.
scheme.
Okay, yeah. Well, Councillor Mark Lee for Labour and Athy MD, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ciara. Thank you, Mark, for that. Some of the other guests is coming in. Linda says, is it a coin machine? No, it's not a coin machine in regards to that. Michael in Kilberry, is someone splashing their feet in water in a pool or a bath? No, it's not. We gave you, it was formerly known as audience clapping. No, it's not that either, some of them. So people keep trying. I don't need your guesses, as I say, but if you do put it in, we'll say whether it is the guess or not. But it better if you don't put in your guesses, maybe, because we want to just pick a name free of what we know you're going to say. So no one can ever say, oh, you're picking somebody who's wrong all the time and not the correct ones. Well, Tina O'Connor won €110 yesterday. So somebody's €100 up for grabs today and €10 added every day. On Fridays, if it's not won, we'll double your money at that stage to €280. On each Monday after that as well. And now it's time to join the co-founder of Spark Ireland. Now, Spark Ireland advocates on behalf of single parents. And this results our chat this morning. IBEC, which represents businesses, recommends the child benefit is taxed for higher income families, but kept at the same rate for those on low incomes. Single parents say taxing child benefit is not only unfair, but treats children differently. And to tell us more, then, Louise Bale is co-founder of Spark Ireland. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Glenn. Thanks for having me on.
So, I mean, IBEC, right, is calling for tax benefit, child benefit to be taxed for higher income families. I mean, you could have someone who's a millionaire and they're entitled to claim child benefit. Surely there's a case for that, is there? Would you agree with IBEC?
No, I don't agree with IBEC at all. I believe that it's one of the few universal payments that we have, and it's important from a psychological point of view for, firstly, that all children born are equal to the exact same payment, and there's something universal about that, and it's good. The second point that's made is that, you know, high earners don't need it. No, they don't need it, but they do pay a lot of tax, and to get some of that back in the form of the €140 a month is not too much to ask. Thirdly, from the point of view of financial independence, there's a huge financial freedom of getting that child benefit. A lot of women are forced out of job because of high childcare costs. And raising children is a very hard job. And when you're not getting any financial reward for it, there is something really psychologically important of having that money going directly into a woman's bank account or collecting from the post office and knowing this is her money. She's not earning a wage, even though she's working hard, but she's getting the child benefit and she can go and treat the kids to a new pair of shoes or whatever the children need that month. And then there's also the point that just because in a one-earner family that there's a high income does not necessarily means it flows down. And we know financial abuse is a very real and solid part of domestic violence and domestic abuse. And having that access to that money is very important. And we don't know where domestic abuse stays is in which families, but we do know it's in all socioeconomic brackets. And there are women and men who are living in high economic, you know, valued families, but there's still people living in poverty in those families because they've no access to the money. And at least the child benefit offers some recourse to that. And lastly, I know I'm going on a bit, but lastly, I would just point, do any of us really believe that if child benefit was taxed, that it would actually be ring-fenced and it would go to early learning?
Well, that's the position of IBEC, of course, who say that if it was taxed, then that money could be diverted to paying the services that are so badly needed in regards to that. They also make the point that other countries, and this is a submission, by the way, that they've made to the Commission on Taxation and Social Welfare, they say other countries such as the UK have moved towards taxation of child benefit payments above certain thresholds and redirecting the tax take into direct supports. As you've said, you're sceptical and maybe even cynical about that view.
I am cynical of that view, and I'm also cynical of the view that we would need to tax a benefit for children to pay for services for children. We don't put extra taxes on certain people because they're more likely to access a hospital or anything like that. And I think we need to get away from this thing that childcare and early learning is a luxury and it's not a necessity. The one thing lockdown showed us that society couldn't function when schools and creches and childcare and early learning facilities closed. We couldn't function. They're a necessity. And 50 or 60 years ago, Donoghue O'Malley made a huge radical move that was seen as rash at the time of saying that every child was entitled to second level. Well, what we're looking for is every child should be entitled to early learning, and that shouldn't be dependent on a child benefit. The one progressive payment we have that's universal would be taxed to fund that. We should just accept it as we accept the hospitals, we accept schools, we expect science labs to be funded. Early learning should be seen in that same category and should be funded without taxing child benefit. And it's just a lovely thing, and it reduces stigma for everybody. Everybody knows they're all getting that payment.
When you mention Don O'Malley, by the way, back in 68 when he brought in what was called free education, parents might guffaw at the idea of free education now, because we know absolutely that education is not free. You mightn't be paying fees, but you are paying so-called voluntary contributions, which are not voluntary at all, because we've heard many, many a case if you don't pay.
And also, even apart from the voluntary fees, the idea of putting uniforms where you can only buy them in one shop and it's the expensive shop and you can't just go into Dunn's and buy a pair of grey trousers, all of that adds up to the cost of childcare. And we know that, and we know the back-to-school clothing and footwear allowance is a huge benefit to people who are trying to get children back to school, because it's such an expensive month in August and September. And we do agree with those targeted supports, and it's needed. You know, the working family payment have additional payments for children, so as does the qualified child increase of young social welfare. Those targeted supports are necessary, but it doesn't take away from the fact that a universal payment is a statement from our society, from our government, from our state, from our taxpayers, that we value every child born equally, and every child born is entitled to that 140. And that's something I think is precious, and we should fight to hold on.
On that note, child benefit is €140 a month for children up to 16. It is paid for those up to 18 if they're in full-time education or have a disability and cannot support themselves. And indeed, knocking down any suggestion that be taxed for the reasons that she has outlined. Co-founder of Spark Ireland, the organisation advocates on behalf of single parents, Louise Bayliss. Thanks for joining us this morning, Louise.
Thanks very much.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Bridget in Dublin asks, is the mystery sound a trashing machine? No, Bridget, in County Dublin, it's not.
Crime Watch on KFM.
With Manguard Plus, Ladytown Business Park, Nace. We keep it secure and safe 24 hours a day. 045 408 300.
Joining me on the line now for this week's Crime Time is Sergeant Martin Long of Carberry Garda Station. Martin, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Morning, Owen, thanks.
So we'll be going to Clane, Newbridge, Selbridge, Castledermot and Leixlip for this morning's roundup. And we'll start off in Clane, Martin, a burglary there.
Yeah, so this is a new house and estate at the back of Collegewood Manor in Clane. It's called Clun Alva. So between the 11th and the 12th of January, there was vacant houses broken into by somebody breaking windows. Whilst they were in these houses, they caused significant damage to flooring and stole copper wire, that type of stuff went on. So the guards in Clane or Nace are appealing for anybody who might have any information or saw anything suspicious at that time to make contact with them.
Okay, there was also a burglary in Newbridge then, Martin. When did this happen?
Yeah, so this again was between the 14th and the 15th of January at Langton Park in Newbridge. Again, a house was broken into from the rear of the property. Damage was caused to a lock. This house then was ransacked and there was a lot of property stolen. Again, it would have taken significant time to enter this house. So again, the guards in Newbridge are saying, does this resonate with anybody who might have saw anyone acting suspicious in the Langton Park area on the 14th and 15th of January?
Okay, and there was a burglary in the north of the county, specifically in Selbridge.
Yeah, so again, this happened in an apartment in Hazel Hatch Park in Selbridge. It happened on the 14th of January 2022, and we can be specific that it happened between 3 and 6 p.m. Again, the apartment was broken into by damage to a lock. Again, that would have taken time to gain entry. So the guards in Leixlip are looking for anybody who might have information or any or saw anything suspicious in the area to make contact.
Okay, if we stay in Leixlip, then there was an arrest made in the last few days or week or so. What was this in relation to?
Yeah, so yesterday morning in the early hours, Gardaí responding to a car acting suspicious stopped it in the Confey area of Leixlip. It was a 2010 registered beige Skoda Octavia. There was one male arrested. There was a significant amount of property within the car, including clothing, laptop bags, wallets, loose change. That male was arrested on suspicion of theft. He was brought back to Leixlip station. Throughout the day, numerous calls were made to the station from estates in Leixlip and Kilcock with regards to thefts from cars that were left open. Gardaí were able to identify the property within that car to these thefts, and a male was charged and is due before Blanchardstown District Court this morning in relation to multiple offences.
And there was also an arrest made in Castledermot. Now, we covered this on our news bulletins throughout the week, but what can you tell us about the background details here, Martin?
Okay, so on the 15th of January 2022, Saturday at approximately 2:05, two males entered the Maxwell service station on Main Street, Castledermot. Staff was threatened and money was taken and cigarettes. They fled the scene in a grey BMW 520, and it was last seen heading out the Carlow Road in Castledermot. Following inquiries, Gardaí arrested two males. They were arrested and they were subsequently charged in Naas District Court on the 17th of January. Those two males then were remanded in custody and they're due again before Naas District Court tomorrow.
Okay, great stuff. With those issues that have been brought forward and crimes around the county, enlisting your help, Sergeant Martin Long is from Carberry Garda Station. Martin, thanks for joining us.
Crime Watch on KFM.
With Manguard Plus, Ladytown Business Park, Naas, PSA licensed, 045 408 300 or manguardplus.ie.
Now, Kildare play Laois tonight in the Netwatch Cullen Park in the quarter semi-final of the Auburn Cup. Place against Dublin in the final next Saturday is at stake. This is the team that has been named with Owen Beattie.
In goals, Mark Donlan Maynooth, full back line, David Randall's Ballyteague, Mike Joyce, Round Towers, Tom Harrington, Moorfield, half back line, David Highland, Athy, James Murray, Moorfield, Tony Archibald, Selbridge, middle of the field, Liam Power, Raheens, Tyg Hoey, Sarsfields, half forward line, Davey O'Neill, Round Towers, Owen Lawless, Suncroft, Kevin Flynn, Selbridge, full forward line, Paddy Woodgate, Raheens, Daniel Flynn, Johnstown Bridge, Jimmy Highland, Ballyteague.
And here's what Glen Ryan told us following last week's win over Carlow.
It was a competitive game, and any day you play any kind of game you want to win, so it was good to get. Very happy you're getting a win.
Obviously very early in the season, yeah, but following on from Westmeath on Saturday, what's pleasing you so far from the team so far that you've seen?
Their application and how much they want to try and improve things. So that's every day we try to improve. We'll improve some days, other days we mightn't, but it's important the days that we don't, we stay competitive and try and bring some level of consistency along with what we're trying to do, you know.
Two good scoring tallies. We had your old mate Peter McConnell is in the commentary box there, and he was impressed with the way that the players were getting into very good shooting positions. There was no kind of silly shots from different angles. They were trying to get to the edge of the D into the scoring zones and get the shots away from there.
Sure. If Peter's happy, we're all happy.
He doesn't know much about scoring himself now, but yeah, he was impressed with that bit. Yeah. But I suppose it's very encouraging to see some guys who wouldn't have featured for the senior team before really stepping up and taking their opportunity.
Well, they've worked hard to get an opportunity, and it's great to have the Auburn Cup games. There's no comparison with playing a competitive game this evening to trying to play a challenge match. Mm. No comparison opportunities.
Mm. And some of the guys who maybe are injured at the moment, would you hope to have them back soon? Like Kevin Feeney, Fergal Comey, yeah. Adam Masterson, or how long would you see the likes of Owen Doyle as well, that Nathan team just staying away before you'd bring someone in?
Sure, we'll see how things go. But the important thing is that when they're on the pitch, they're 100%. Mm. And that's hugely important. So they won't be rushed until they're right.
And the win here tonight obviously means you get another game next week, so you'd be pleased as well to get the opportunity to get another chance to get the lads to run out against maybe a higher standard opposition.
I don't know what the opposition would be, but it's a competitive game. It's important to have a look at us ourselves as a management team. Players out on the pitch, to be playing these games that are in a competitive environment, and it makes a difference. You know?
It does make a difference indeed. A full commentary this evening, 7:25, with Ger McNally and Peter McConnon in Netwatch Cullen Park. So join our coverage from 7:25, brought to you as usual in association with Hand and Concrete Products of Robertstown. And hopefully Kildare come through on that one, with all due respect to Laois. I'll place against Dublin on Saturday, also in Netwatch Cullen Park at 3 o'clock. And if Dublin are in the final on Saturday, we'll have full commentary of that game as well. And of course Sunday, Naas Hurlers All-Ireland Club semi-final against Tyrone of Mayo, and also next Sunday the Kildare Hurlers Keogh Cup second round match against Westmeath. Lots to do later in the week. We're getting lots of guesses in. And Tony Malone, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ken. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. Tony, you're in County Carlow. Where in Carlow are you?
Oh, I'm in the Carlow town, Clem. I'm originally from Clarinca. You get an odd text from me.
We do indeed. More than an odd text from you. Good Clarinca man. How did you end up in Carlow? In exile, Tony?
Well, I worked in Newbridge. I worked in Bournemouth and Matanga, and I then went to work with Bournemouth down in Ballyver in County Meath. I played with Bertie Cunningham down there for a few years, and then there was a job going back Newbridge Industries there now, was at the back of Dunn Stores, and it closed up after a few years when the oil crisis came in 74. And I got a job then. I got two jobs in Carlow the 1 week. There was very few jobs going. I got one down here in Braun, Ireland, which is ORB up there. It moved back to Newbridge now. But yeah, I spent 27 years there, Sam.
By God.
Then I went driving for 8 years for Doctors on Call here in Carlow.
Good man, Tony. You're a fairly talented and versatile man, Tony.
I wouldn't say that now, but anyway.
Carlow, yeah. I mean, since my time in Carlow with CKR, which was from 19...
I remember you on the radio down here back then, yeah.
Yeah, 91 to 2000. I mean, Carlow...
Great Christy Welch worked here that time.
I mean, Carlow was a small town at that stage. It's expanded enormously in the years since. So, Tony, you're in for the mystery sound. Let's have a listen. For €100, Tony Malone, what do you think that is?
I think that's a lot of drum turning, Sam.
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not, is it not?
And it's also a Francis Dunn in Rathvilly. You Carlow people must have... well, you're not a Carlow man, you're a Clarenca man living in Carlow. But down in Carlow, you must be used to lotto balls, because...
Well, I don't listen. I don't even do the lotto. I don't even listen to it. When I heard the first now, it sounded very like that. Yeah.
Francis Dunn down in Rathvilly in Carlow said it also is the lotto balls or the lotto drum. And another person is the mystery sound, the lock keeper letting the water out at the canal. Wow, people have great imaginations altogether, but I'm afraid, absolutely, no, it's not the lock keeper or any of those.
Thanks for giving me a go anyway.
Not at all, Tony. And,